Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Robert Bilott was a legal expert on the Environmental Protection Agency's regulatory framework, the Superfund Law, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Toxic Substances Control Act, and he used that expertise and knowledge to defend chemical companies and help clients comply with the new regulations for the Cincinnati law firm Taff, Stettinius and Hollister. But in 1998, Bilott changed course when he took on the case of a Parkersburg, West Virginia farmer who believed that DuPont runoff from its Teflon plant was killing his cows. In time, Bilott came to learn more about what is commonly known as C8, a component of Teflon. The story of his two-decade crusade against DuPont is told in the new major motion picture, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo as Robert Bilott. In this scene, he's asking a chemist about C8.
That chemical.
What if you drank it?
Drank it? It's like saying, what if I swallowed a tire?
What if whatever's killing those cows is in the drinking water?
Bilott has written his own story about the case. The book is titled Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. Robert Bilott joins us. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's, the more I think about it, the whole story, I've seen the movie, I've read the book. The circumstances are so just chancy that farmer would come to see that lawyer in Cincinnati. You had a connection, and it made all the difference.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of things actually had to align in the right way for this story to actually have unfolded the way it did, and for all of us to now know about this chemical and now this whole family of chemicals that are all over this planet. It just so happened that my grandmother had grown up outside of Parkersburg, West Virginia, and she happened to have been talking on the phone one day with her neighbor who had just talked with Mr. Tennant, who was looking for a lawyer. So the stars aligned.
All right. You were working for a fancy law firm in Cincinnati. I think you're still with them, defending chemical companies, including some work with DuPont lawyers. What kind of cases were you doing at the time?
Yeah, I have been working at the law firm of Taft, Stettinius and Hollister since 1990, so they're 29 years. And during the first 8 years or so that I was at the firm, I was primarily helping corporate clients, including a lot of big chemical companies, try to comply with all the different federal and state environmental rules, statutes, regulations, you know, quite a dizzying array of rules and laws to comply with, and trying to help them navigate that process. And in that process, I started to learn all those different rules, different regulations, and the world of regulated and hazardous chemicals. So that's what I had been heavily involved in for the first 8 years of my career, including working with companies at what we call Superfund cleanup sites where hazardous waste had been disposed, and trying to deal with which companies should pay for the cleanups of those sites. And in that work, I was oftentimes in meetings with folks from DuPont, so I knew these folks well.
My guest is Robert Bilott. He's a lawyer and author of the book Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. His story is the subject of the major motion picture, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo as Rob Bilott. If you have a question or comment this hour for Rob, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, The issue here at point is when we're talking about regulated chemicals, we're talking about one thing. What you uncovered was the story behind an unregulated chemical and the significance of that, right?
That's right. When I was working at the firm in those first 8 years, I was under the impression that we had a universe of toxic bad chemicals. Those were the ones that were regulated. Those were the ones that appeared on various lists under federal rules or state rules. And as long as we were dealing with those chemicals and handling those appropriately, everything should be okay. And what we discovered through this case for Mr. Tennant and his family out near Parkersburg was that there was this entire world of unregulated chemicals that had essentially gone under the radar of the regulatory agencies. And even though they were unregulated, the chemicals we were dealing with in particular could be highly toxic, could cause cancer, yet nevertheless escape regulation for decades.
DuPont knew this, too. That's at the crux of this story as well, right?
Yeah, what we found was when we started digging into the company's internal documents, what we found was even though this chemical was unregulated, it was a chemical that had been created by the 3M company right after World War II. And DuPont had started purchasing this chemical called PFOA, or C8, as you mentioned, is what DuPont called it. They started purchasing it as early as 1951 and using it in the manufacturing process for Teflon in Parkersburg. And that was decades before there was a U.S. EPA. The EPA didn't even come into existence until 1970. And some of the first federal laws regulating the introduction of chemicals out into the market came out in 1976. So this was a chemical that had been used for decades. And even though it was unregulated, the companies, DuPont and 3M, had been looking into the toxicity of the chemical. They knew from its sort of unusual chemical structure, these carbons attached to fluorine that made it really difficult to break down once it got out into the environment. They started doing toxicity tests to see what would happen when this stuff got out in the environment. And by the 60s, they were finding all kinds of toxic effects in lab animals. By the 70s, they had found that this chemical was getting into and would stay in and build up in human blood. And by the 80s, they found that it was causing cancer in laboratory studies and then started tracking these cancer rates in their workers. So there was a huge wealth of data within the company files about the toxicity and potential health threat from the chemical. But unfortunately, what we are also seeing in those company files is that most of that information wasn't being shared with either the government, the regulators, or the public who was being exposed.
And there's no obligation on the part of the company to share that kind of information?
Well, actually, there is. There is an obligation under the Federal Toxic Substances Control Act that came out in 1976, where a company, if it acquires knowledge that there's a substantial risk to human health or the environment from a chemical they're handling, is supposed to notify the U.S. EPA so they can step in and look into it and possibly begin to regulate that material. Mm-hmm. What we saw, though, was the company was repeatedly deciding not to report that data. And actually, once I started providing that information to the U.S. EPA around 2001, and the EPA started digging into all that data, they actually sued DuPont in 2004. Claiming that the company had unlawfully withheld the information from the agency. Mm-hmm. And if they had produced it years earlier, the EPA might have been able to start regulating this decades ago.
And how was that resolved?
DuPont ended up settling that case with U.S. EPA. They ended up paying what they called a civil penalty, which the EPA at the time claimed was the largest civil administrative penalty in the history of the agency. But it was only a $16 million amount.
Which is paltry compared to the $1 billion a year that DuPont was making, profiting from on Teflon alone.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was only a very small fraction of the amount of money and profit that the company was making from use of this chemical for decades.
The stories about how when you took on this case, you expected it to be short-lived. It wasn't expected to turn into what it did. What were your expectations at the outset when you first met Wilbur Tennant in Parkersburg?
Yeah, when I first met Mr. Tennant and sat down and looked at his videotapes and looked at the photographs he had brought with him. It looked to us like a pretty obvious problem at this landfill. You know, here we're dealing with a landfill that was regulated by the state of West Virginia. There was white foaming water coming out of this landfill, and we could see diseased cows with blackened teeth, wasting away, tumors, impacts to wildlife in the area. It seemed like pretty obvious that there was a problem here. Mm-hmm. From my work up at that to that point in the environmental world, I assumed we could pull the permits for the landfill. It would identify whatever sort of toxic or hazardous materials were there, and we could identify something maybe that was being emitted above the permit limits. And we were hoping that would be a fairly straightforward thing to do. And unfortunately, as we dug in more, what we found, we couldn't really find explanation for it in what was being regulated at that landfill, and it ended up to be this completely unregulated material, which became much, much more complicated than we had initially anticipated. I try to explain a lot of that in more detail in the book, mm-hmm. Exposure.
My guest is Robert Balat. He's a lawyer and author of the book Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. It is the subject of the recently released major motion picture, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo, who plays Robert Balat in the movie. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. To All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about the story behind the new major motion picture, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo. It tells the story of a corporate defense attorney turned environmental activist. The attorney's name is Robert Balat, and he's with us today. His own book is titled Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. If you have a question or comment for Rob Balat, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rob, tell us about the relationship between the DuPont company, the corporation, and Parkersburg, West Virginia.
Well, the DuPont constructed a major manufacturing facility there in the 1940s. And by 1998 or so, when I first met Mr. Tennant, you know, this had become the world's largest Teflon manufacturing plant right there along the Ohio River outside of Parkersburg. And it had thousands of employees. And so we're talking about a plant that had been in that community for a long time, was well-respected in the community, supported a lot of the community organizations. A lot of folks work there. Either they work there or they knew people that work there. Places within the community are named after the company. So it had a strong presence in the community. When these issues first came up, the folks like Mr. Tennant and then later Mr. Kiger and others in the community that started raising questions about what was going on at the plant really met with some strong resistance from the community.
Your overriding concern once you started to see these reports about the chemicals was the health of the residents who'd been drinking the water. And describe how you got DuPont to pay for the medical monitoring and what the significance of that was to ensure that thousands of those residents would get their blood tested.
Yeah, and eventually, after we found out that this chemical, 7,000 tons of sludges soaked with PFOA, had been dumped in the landfill next to Mr. Tennant's property, and we settled that case. We, unfortunately, though, had realized at that point that the chemical wasn't just on Mr. Tennant's property. It was in the drinking water of the whole community. We ended up being asked to help the residents there. We brought a class action against DuPont in 2001. And after several years of litigation, we ended up settling that case in 2004. And it was a pretty unique settlement. First, we DuPont agreed to pay for water filtration systems, so at least we could stop the ongoing drinking water exposures. But one of the things the community really wanted to know, and one of the main drivers in that litigation, was the folks drinking it wanted to know what it was going to do to them in the long term. You know, there had been all of these internal animal studies, there had been worker studies showing all kinds of adverse effects, yet DuPont was repeatedly taking the position that there was simply no risk to the people that were drinking this in the water. So when we sat down and settled that case, we agreed with DuPont that we would set up this completely independent scientific panel, something really that hadn't been done before. Both sides would select completely independent scientists to look at all of the data, not just what was published out there, but also the internal studies, and do a new study of the community that was actually drinking this in the water to confirm what will that do to people that are drinking it in the long term. That panel ended up studying this for over 7 years. They did 12 different massive epidemiological studies, and we actually had 69,000 people from that community come in, participate, give blood. So we ended up doing some of the most massive, comprehensive human health studies ever done on any chemical. And by 2012, that panel had been able to confirm that drinking this in the water was linked with 6 diseases, including 2 types of cancer. So, you know, a really unique process that had never been done before. And because of that work, because of that panel being able to confirm those links, everyone in the community then was entitled to free medical monitoring going forward to look for the onset of those diseases. And people who had one of those diseases could pursue damage claims.
DuPont backed out of it at that point, right?
Well, what DuPont took the position that certain parts of the proof on causation still needed to be established in these trials, something that we disagreed with. We litigated that in court over what the agreement was for over a year, and eventually the court decided and ruled that DuPont was bound by their written settlement agreement. So we ended up going to trial, and DuPont was found liable for having caused cancer in that community. In fact, in the first 3 trials, found liable in all 3, and then eventually settled in the middle of the 4th trial for the remaining cases.
It settled, but did it admit culpability?
No. DuPont has never admitted culpability or liability. It agreed to settle the cases, though, without admitting any fault or liability.
What difference does it make when a company like DuPont doesn't admit liability?
Well, I think it's difficult for folks who are not familiar with the legal system. You know, I think a lot of us go in hoping to see something, where somebody is forced to admit, yes, you know, I did it, or yes, you know, I'm responsible for this. You know, in our court system, really, even if you go to trial and you're found liable, typically the most that can happen is the other side is required to pay damages or to pay money, you know, to make up for whatever that finding was. There's really very few times that you ever have somebody actually be required to say I'm liable or admit guilt or anything like that. That just isn't the way the system works.
Hmm. Let's take a call now from Donald in Lancaster. Donald, you're on the air with Rob Balat, the lawyer and author of the book Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. Go ahead, Donald.
Good morning, Ann, and good morning, Rob. Appreciate this program because it's very important. And I wanted to mention that even C8, if you know it by the organic chemical name, it's a little bit more difficult for people to pronounce it, perfluorooctanoic acid. Mm-hmm. It's become more prevalent in the environment as Rob mentions. Even our own bodies, it's become like a baseline. And he mentioned the blood panels that have been accomplished on, I think he mentioned a number of the 69,000 people. The matter is, and And as he mentioned as well, the this what I call legal wrangling between entities instead of individuals have left each of us susceptible. The matter is, and I'll just mention this, a lot of the tributaries, even through Ohio, going to the Ohio River, like the Hocking River, mm-hmm. where a DuPont company is located, mm-hmm. In that river, the Hocking River, the CA chemical, it's detectable. And I was wondering if, like as you mentioned, is it going to be possible for any kind of individual protections to be accomplished in now or in the future, or as well, the issue with DuPont being personally liable, sorry, trying to catch my breath.
Sure.
Liable instead of like the Superfund, like DuPont's business with the federal government basically subsidizes these issues. And I wanted to just mention as well, I mean, I kind of understand C8's purpose, its benefits, because it's even used besides in plastics. It's even used in useful things like fire extinguishing agents. So mm-hmm. It's a difficult topic when you got a chemical that might be harmful in some way,
yeah.
beneficial in another.
Well, let's get to one of the things I wanted to follow up on what Donald just said, Rob Balat, is the question of cleanup. Can this be cleaned up? Is there any requirement that DuPont clean up the operation in Parkersburg or anywhere where it produced Teflon?
Yeah, you know, what we're dealing with are chemicals that, you know, we're now hearing them referred to as forever chemicals, mm-hmm. not only PFOA, but these related chemicals in that same family called PFAS, P-F-A-S. You know, there's hundreds of related chemicals. You know, the problem is once they get out into the environment, you know, they're extremely difficult to break down. They don't necessarily break down under natural conditions. They can stay out in our soil, for millions of years. Until they're physically removed. They stay in the water. They stay in our environment, in animals that where it builds up, in people. You know, we're now talking about chemicals that are in essentially 99% of humans all over the planet and getting in animals all over the world. So it's unfortunately, people are only just becoming aware that this contamination even exists. You know, even though we've been dealing with it here in the Ohio River Valley area for almost 20 years, the rest of the world is only sort of waking up and recognizing that this contamination even happened. And what's going on right now is most of the effort is being focused on stopping the ongoing exposure, you know, mm-hmm. making sure it's cleaned up out of water, making sure water filters are put in to at least stop the ongoing exposure and to phase out PFOA and related materials. But there, people are only just now starting to look into how do we get rid of it? You know, what can be done to actually remove these materials so they don't continue to be ongoing sources of exposure in the environment, in our soil, in our water? There have been efforts underway in various states, you know, to try to enact laws and regulations to require these things to be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. There were efforts underway at the federal level to try to pass legislation that would require these materials to be cleaned up. But that, unfortunately, is moving extremely slow at this point.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you've seen the movie or are planning to see the movie Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo, you should know that I'm talking to the man who the movie is about, Rob Balat. He's a lawyer and author of the book Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Is C8 or PFOA and all of the ancillary chemicals, are they regulated now? Are they banned now, Rob Balat?
Well, it depends on where you're located. These chemicals still are essentially unregulated at the federal level. The U.S. EPA is still working on looking into whether or not they're going to set drinking water standards, for example, or regulate them as hazardous under the Superfund law. You know, that's a process that's been going on now for almost 20 years.
Right.
But to this day, you know, that still is not quite happened at the federal level. So what we see happening are individual states have been moving forward. There are some states that are starting to declare PFOA, for example, hazardous under their state Superfund laws. There are states that are moving forward to set enforceable drinking water standards, you know, in the meantime, while the EPA looks at the issue. So it really varies. And so what's happening is you have these sort of wide range of different rules and standards popping up all over the country right now. But really, they're all sort of trending in the same direction, which is you know, that most of the people that are looking at this issue are recommending lower and lower exposure guidelines and limits for these chemicals. The more we know about them, the lower the safety levels are going.
Ruth in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. First of all, thanks, Mr. Bellott, so much for your courageous work. My question is, as consumers, is there any way, like if we're going to replace our fry pan or try to buy floss that doesn't have these PFOA or PFAS, is there any way we can know what to buy?
Yeah, there are, in fact, efforts underway right now to try to help educate consumers and the public as to what types of products these chemicals have historically been used in, which companies are switching away from these products. You know, trying to provide information so people can at least be aware of these exposures and take steps to try to protect themselves. You know, up to now, unfortunately, most of us were not even aware that these exposures were happening, and we really didn't have a choice because we didn't know. So these efforts are underway. There are a number of organizations that are trying to make that kind of information available. There's a new Fight Forever Chemicals campaign that was released in conjunction with the movie Dark Waters that's providing information. Green Science Policy Institute, the Environmental Working Group, the Center for Environmental Health. There are a number of organizations that are trying to make exactly that kind of information available on their websites. Because as you heard by one of the prior caller, you know, we're talking about chemicals that have been used in a vast array of consumer products, not just nonstick cookware, but stain-resistant clothing, carpeting, fast food wrappers and packaging, firefighting foam. So there's a lot of information out there on all these different uses, and hopefully with these campaigns, people will have a lot more information at their fingertips and be able to make better choices.
Thank you, Ruth, for that call. What about the people in Parkersburg? Has anybody been reporting on or following the general health of the folks there?
Well, part of what was done under the settlement back in 2004 mm-hmm. was setting up these very extensive human health studies. Again, you know, these were probably some of the most comprehensive ones ever done. Those focused on the health effects within that community, you know, the 70,000 people or so. So we've got some pretty extensive human health studies that have been done. And now, once those links were confirmed with the six different diseases, we have a medical monitoring program that is currently underway. Anyone in the community, you know, that's part of that original class action that drank water from these six different water supplies or private wells, they have a right to free medical monitoring to detect these diseases early. And there's an extensive protocol laid out for folks if they want to talk to their doctors about what kind of testing would be appropriate. That's at c-8medicalmonitoringprogram.com. There's information posted there from independent medical panel, because we sat down after the links were found and formed a new panel with DuPont. Again, completely independent folks. This time they were medical doctors, and they looked at these diseases and came up with a protocol of what type of medical testing might be appropriate. So people can look at those lists and hopefully have information to discuss with their doctors if they choose to.
Let's see, Sandy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, thank you for being on the show, and thank you, Ann Fisher, for having this program. I plan to see the movie tomorrow, but I have a question. I try to do some environmental work here in Columbus and in the state, and there's a lot of opposition. So my question to you is, when you're facing the opposition, either from other lawyers who are working against what you're trying to do or from legislatures, why? I mean, where are they coming from? Their children are affected by what's a terrible, unclean environment as well. Why is there even opposition? Why does everybody just say, yeah, you're right, let's
clean this
up?
I mean, to us out here, it feels like a no-brainer, right? Sandy, Rob Balat, what is it taking so long with the U.S. EPA?
Yeah.
Well, you know, unfortunately, yeah, it has been taking a long time. As I indicated, I think I first sent a letter to U.S. EPA warning of this, what I still believe to be a public health hazard. That was in March of 2001, you know, so here we are 18 years later. And again, I think part of the problem here is because of the widespread use of these chemicals for so many decades in so many different consumer products by so many different companies, you know, that we're talking about, you know, moving forward with regulations or standards. There are a lot of folks that probably find that to be negative impact to them economically. So there are a lot of folks who have economic interests in trying to make sure this is not regulated. You know, and unfortunately, as that continues, those of us who are exposed and the taxpayers, we're picking up the costs, as opposed to the folks that actually made these chemicals, put them out there in our environment, knowing, you know, full well that if they were put out there, they would get into humans, they would get into the environment, they would stay there forever. So we're talking about such widespread exposure as well and such massive contamination. You know, we're talking about global contamination here. So the liabilities and the potential costs are enormous. So I think that provides a lot of incentive for folks who want to oppose this.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Rob Balat. He's a lawyer and author of the book Exposure: Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. His story is told as well in the major motion picture, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo. It's in the theaters right now. If you have a question or comment for Rob, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And thanks to Sandy for her call. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the story behind the new major motion picture, Dark Waters, starring Mark Ruffalo. It tells the story of a corporate defense attorney turned environmental activist. The attorney's name is Robert Balat, and he's with us today. His own book is titled Exposure: Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. The movie is great, and so is the book. I encourage you to watch it and read the book as well. Rob Balat, thanks again for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I wondered how much of Dark Waters, the movie, is fact, how much is fiction. Is there anything important that we should know about the movie?
No, I think they did an absolutely fantastic job, frankly, of being able to condense, you know, what is in essence a 20-year story, a 20-year history into 2 hours, and did it in a way that really, I think, allows the audiences to understand what the folks in these communities went through. the different things that were going on, the different pressures, the different aspects of the story. I think they did a tremendous job in doing that and doing it in a way that really lets folks know what transpired and what the feelings were in these communities and how it really impacted real people.
How did the community in Parkersburg react to this story and to the lawsuit against DuPont and to the revelations since then?
Well, it's been a difficult road. We're talking about a place where a lot of folks work for the company or had relatives who've worked there or know somebody that does. It was very difficult over the years, and even the folks that were involved in trying to help bring this information out, met with a lot of resistance, even with the local media. And so it's not been easy to get this information out to people. And I'm hoping that with the book and with the movie, that I'm hoping more people there in the local community will understand what their neighbors actually did and what the sacrifices, the Tenet family and the Kigers and others in their own community, those sacrifices they made, to help the rest of us. So I'm hoping things really, that this really brings more information and assistance to people to understand what really happened.
The Ohio Manufacturing Association sponsors a website that is critical of the movie and its depiction of the Ohio River Valley. It touts the manufacturing jobs created there, as you've mentioned. What is your response to that?
Well, I've seen this kind of thing now for 20 years. Mm-hmm. First of all, we're talking about a manufacturing facility that's in West Virginia, not Ohio. I think anybody that takes a look at that website will see, there's really nothing specifically that's even been identified as being in any way misleading or inaccurate. But again, I'm confident that people are intelligent enough when they look at the movie, when they read the book, they're going to understand where the true facts are.
We did reach out to DuPont. They did not respond to our queries. DuPont told the Columbus Dispatch in a statement that the film, quote, misrepresents things that happened years ago, including our history, our values, and science. And the company said it supports regulating forever chemicals. What's your understanding of all of that?
Well, again, I think people can see for themselves what actually transpired over this time frame by reading the book, seeing the movie. There's plenty of information available online through different reporters and others who have brought the actual facts out for the public to take a look at. These facts have been presented to three different juries, in Ohio, in Columbus, in federal court, in multiple week trials. So the information's been made available and to the public to draw their own conclusions. And I think it's also important for people to understand that, DuPont, the company that we were dealing with back in the 1990s and early 2000s, that company has since spun off its entire Teflon business into a different company, now called Chemours. And then what was left of DuPont merged with Dow Chemical and has recently then split into three new companies, one of which now has the DuPont name and is making these statements, but is very different from the company that people knew as DuPont in the 1990s and early 2000s.
Part of the story of all of this was how your law firm stuck by you as you pursued this case. As you prosecuted it, it's the type they normally defend, and which did not bring in any money until years later when you won your first settlement. Did it change the law firm?
Well, I think, we've always had very strong core values here at the firm, that when we take on representation of a client, we're going to do that and continue that representation, to the best of our ability. And it may be difficult or it may take a long time, but, once we take on representation, we stick by it. And, I really can't, I don't know how many other firms would have done what our firm did and stuck by this as long as we did and devote the kind of resources we did, to make sure that our clients We're well represented. And, you know, I think I'm hoping that when people read the book, see the movie, see what the firm did, mm-hmm. The other firms, other lawyers are inspired to do similar work.
Before that, though, the firm was focused on defending chemical companies. Has it changed the trajectory of that, or is it largely still a defense firm for chemical companies?
Well, our firm has grown substantially since the 1990s. We're going to be growing significantly here at the beginning of the year with a new office in Minneapolis. So the firm now does a wide variety of work, and we do work representing individuals injured by exposures like this. So we do this kind of work now going forward.
Let's see. I'm going to grab Derek in Dublin. You're on the air. Hi, Derek.
Hi, good morning. I was calling because I saw the movie last Friday, and I was really, really moved by it. I took my 89-year-old mother-in-law with me, and she said it was one of the most powerful movies she has ever seen. We live in an age where we just are assaulted by corruption in institutions, in the corporate world, in government, in the church, causing people to wonder, you know, if anything is right with the world. Mm-hmm. Mr. Bellot's work, his perseverance in the face of overwhelming obstacles, and the impatience of his law firm, the people in the community, and the frustrations in his personal life would have deterred any human being. There was definitely a spiritual component, a justice component, to what he did, and I was glad that the movie depicted a few frames of his faith life. I think it's so appropriate in this season that we celebrate the triumph of light over darkness to see a movie like that. Hmm. So just want to thank Mr. Bellot for his work. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. That is so nice of you to make those comments. I'm hoping that people, when they come out of this movie, are inspired to know that, you know, the truth prevails. And, you know, if it may take a long time, but, you know, even one individual standing up like Mr. Tennant can make a massive difference. And, you know, community coming together and working together and doing the right thing, that in the end, that prevails. And so I'm really hoping that people are inspired by the story.
Derek, thanks a lot for that call. Mr. Tennant, of course, we know he passed away from cancer during the time of the movie, the time frame of the film, and you write about it in your book. His spouse, has she survived?
Well, unfortunately, you know, Mr. Tennant had cancer, and also, as you mentioned, passed away. He had a heart attack and all kinds of health issues.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, his wife Sandra passed away from cancer just a couple years later. So, you know, it's really unfortunate that they did not get to see, their story come out. They were very passionate about making sure everybody knew about this and making sure their community was protected and that everyone, you know, that was being exposed would learn about this. So I think they would be very, very happy to see the story coming out. We were able to show the film when it was right before it was released to members of their family, who I think were very pleased. So it was really an honor to be able to work with them and to help finally bring their story out to a wider audience so people can see what they did for the rest of us.
Tim and Powell, you're on the air with Rob Bellot. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I think the whole conversation harkens me back to Rachel Carson, who published the book A Silent Spring. And it took 20-some years since the publication of that book to get DDT banned. The reason was the lobbying effect of the chemical companies on our state legislatures and national Congress. And while the courts, I guess, are somewhat or supposed to be immune from that kind of influence, our legislators certainly aren't. And my point would be, unless money's taken out of politics it's going to be a long time before it's corrected. Just one other point. ExxonMobil knew in 1986 from its own scientists the effects of fossil fuel and how terrible they were. They buried the memo. Somehow Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island displayed it on, I was watching C-SPAN one day, saw it on C-SPAN. But I haven't heard anything more about it. These people have PR firms, 20, 30 lobbyists per legislature by the time they pool all their money, and all the various associations, like the manufacturers, get in with the chemical companies. It's an uphill battle.
Well, you know, that's an issue that's raised, Tim, in Rob Balat's book and also in the movie, that the government, there's a way you put it in the movie, or maybe it was Mr. Tennant that did, that the government is not in control of this. It's the chemical companies. Rob Balat?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of what we refer to as corporate capture, where, you know, you've got agencies that are massively overworked. They may be underfunded. You know, an agency like the EPA that's faced with looking at information coming in on tens of thousands of chemicals, you know, with a lot of times their budget being slashed and just not enough time or resources to really dig into a lot of these issues. And unfortunately, you know, you've got folks who have the ability to influence how that process moves forward, and, you know, that come in and offer to do the work for them, or offer to, you know, we'll do the risk assessment, we'll help the, you know, prepare these reports. And unfortunately, that goes on. That happens. And, you know, I try to address a little bit of that in my book to explain, you know, the impact that has in this process. And, you know, the end result is something like we're seeing here with PFOA, where information, you know, was first provided to the agencies, you know, 2 decades ago. There's the most massive human health studies ever done on a chemical, linking it with human disease. It's in water all over the country. It's in all of our blood, and we still can't get that chemical regulated at the federal level. And I'm hoping that, you know, folks that see the movie, read the book, will at least come away a little more knowledgeable of how this system works, and hopefully can help come up with ideas of how we fix this going forward.
Thank you, Tim, for that call. And one more call from John in Sunbury. Hi, John.
Yes, from a practical standpoint, if you have a water supply, what type of filtration works for removing these things?
Have they found anything, Rob?
Yeah, and in fact, for PFOA, the chemical that's really the focus of the book and the movie, the C8 chemical that was used by DuPont and, you know, at the Parkersburg plant, there is it's historically a pretty well-known method called granular activated carbon, or a GAC filtration system. And in fact, that's the kind of thing that DuPont paid for the installation of there in those water supplies outside the Parkersburg plant. And, you know, these are pretty effective systems for removing PFOA down to essentially non-detect. Those systems have been put in West Virginia and Ohio, or outside the DuPont plant, about you know, back in 2006, 2007, and they've been working very effectively since. The problem is with some of these related newer replacement chemicals in the PFAS family that have maybe fewer carbons. There's some concern that some of these newer chemicals are slipping through these filters and maybe require different types of treatment technology and things that people are focusing on right now.
John, thanks for that call. You know, the movie shows you grappling with your own health issues. Is there any sense, do we know if that's related to your work on this case, or was it just the stress related to it? Are you okay?
Yeah, everything is essentially under control at this point. I never really quite figured out what all of that was, and I'm not sure we ever will. But at this point, I'm doing fine. Things are under control.
And you spend time with lobbying yourself in Washington, do you not? I understand you traveled there with Mark Ruffalo recently.
Well, my efforts have been trying to just simply make information available, to provide data and facts. For example, sending letters, you know, to the agencies that give them all the underlying facts, the actual documents, the actual studies. And I've been doing what I can, you know, in response to people asking for assistance and help and understanding what do we know about these chemicals, what is known about the health effects, what studies have been done. So I've been trying my best to respond to those requests and make that information available to anybody who's asking for it.
How much of your work revolves around this now?
A considerable amount. You know, we're talking about something where we now know we're not dealing with, again, just this one farm or this one community outside Parkersburg, or this one chemical, PFOA. We now know we have this wider group of PFAS chemicals being found in drinking water now all across the country, all across the world, Australia, Germany, Italy, New Zealand. And the efforts to try to understand this, to try to grasp what these other chemicals are doing as well. You know, and I've been trying to find ways to require the companies that are putting these chemicals out there to fund additional studies of these related chemicals as well. So that's ongoing.
Rob Balot, thank you so much. Rob Balot is a lawyer and author of the book Exposure, Poisoned Water, Corporate Greed, and One Lawyer's 20-Year Battle Against DuPont. It's depicted in the movie Dark Waters. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.